60 years ago today, American troops stormed ashore in North Africa to deliver the first real American punch in the European theater of the Second World War. That November of 1942, Walter Cronkite watched the invasion from the battleship Texas. He was cutting his teeth as a young newswire reporter before he made it big at CBS. One of the lessons he learned that fall was that it's far easier to declare a war than to wage one.
President Roosevelt may have proclaimed the war on December 7, 1941, but for the next 11 months, while covering American convoys in the Atlantic battle against the German submarines, I waited for the land war to start. It was a long year of waiting, but it ended 60 years ago today off the coast of North Africa. Most Americans heard about it Sunday afternoon from CBS's John Daly.
The American invasion force has made landings at Oran and Algiers on the north coast of French North Africa and somewhere on the west coast. These first official details came in a War Department communique released about an hour ago. Among the commands are Major General George S. Patton, commanding the forces landing on the west coast, an indication that...
That was where the land war began for me, somewhere on the west coast. But my road to Morocco had been a leisurely one under the circumstances. As a young reporter for United Press, I had become a kind of officer without portfolio early in 1942. Someone in the military had decided the best way to handle correspondence was to put us in officers' uniforms. We had no military rank except a large, rather enigmatic C on our left arm. During my first Atlantic crossing, dodging those German submarines, I could not help noticing how well-behaved the naval officer seemed in my presence. No swearing, no bawdy jokes, no talk about women. This was going to be an unrewarding journey, I thought. The reason, I soon learned, was the C on my uniform. They thought I was a chaplain. Then, in September 1942, I boarded the battleship Texas and sailed out of Norfolk. But it was not a supply convoy this time. It was an invasion task force heading for the Atlantic coast of North Africa and French Morocco. Our objective was the French arsenal and air base in Port Leyote, about 80 miles north of Casablanca. We hit at dawn November 8th. Back in America, it was the best war news since the Battle of Midway, even if most of the early news did come from the Vichy French, the German puppet government in France.
The Vichy radio supplied some details of the landings on the west coast. They say that bridgeheads have been established both north and south of Casablanca, at Rabat in the north and at Safi in the south. And from the French reports, it's apparent that landing operations of a major scale are going on. Vichy also...
Attached to the Navy, I saw those landing operations from the deck of the Texas. But we were still learning how to fight in 1942, and in the bedlam of invasion, sometimes our best ally was our own ineptness. In the first hour of the attack, I watched the anti-aircraft guns of the Texas hurl a huge field of fire against a squadron of approaching fighters. The bad news was the Texas failed to hit a single plane. On the other hand, the good news was they were our planes, based off a carrier at Casablanca. Over the next day or two, the Texas plastered the French arsenal with heavy bombardment. Everything seemed to go just right. But when I accompanied a gunnery officer ashore to inspect the damage, we were discouraged to find that the intensity of the bombardment had been exceeded only by its inaccuracy. Scarcely a single shell had struck the arsenal. It took a wise local Frenchman to remind us that we had taken our objective intact and that its contents were now ours to use.
There can be little doubt that our invasion forces are large. The Vichy radio estimates that we have thrown 140,000 men into the operation and adds that British divisions are already on the way to reinforce us. Vichy reports already admit that some French troops revolted against the Vichy command, and there were broadcasts over the Casablanca radio reportedly asking Frenchmen to cooperate with the American invasion forces. We also have learned to use the fifth column. In Berlin, Adolf Hitler...
John Daly might not have been so generous had he seen what had become of the propaganda radio operation aboard the Texas. A secret army unit was to begin broadcasting in French under the name Clandestine Radio Maroc. The objective was to entice the Vichy French over to the Allied side. In typical military fashion, The Army declined any help from the Navy in setting up the equipment aboard the Texas. But had the Army known about the huge shock waves 14-inch naval guns can send through their own battleships, they might have reconsidered. When the big Texas cannons began firing at H hour, the concussion rocked the ship and summarily canceled all Radio Maroc broadcasts indefinitely. As a traditional wire serviceman, I confess to having felt a bit smug sometimes in those days. I enjoyed a freedom in the traditional way, unhindered by the complexities of technology.
CBS correspondent Charles Collingwood is with the invasion forces, but as yet there are no communication facilities which he may use for a report. However, we can contact our correspondent in the other North...
My future CBS colleague Charles Collingwood had landed with the Eastern Task Force at Algiers. But he couldn't report for a week. Even when there were communication facilities, broadcasters were not always spared the embarrassments of technology. Since they often could not hear their introduction, they relied on precisely coordinated time cues. The danger was, if the cues were not synchronized, a reporter could be cut through to the network and not know he was on the air, which is what happened to Charles 3 weeks after the invasion.
And now for the first-hand report of the Tunisian fighting, Admiral Radio takes you to CBS Algiers, Charles Collingwood reporting.
It will be 18:32 GMT. I'll give you that check, which is coming up now. This is CBS in North Africa, time checking for CBS in New York. In 5 seconds, 4, 3, 2, 1, what?
65 now.
That was 18:32 GMT. I'll be going ahead in a minute and a half.
Oh, nice. Come on, New York.
You have just heard Charles Collingwood checking through with our offices here in New York, and you heard his report saying that we would hear from him in a minute and a half by our clocks. Until that time, we can give you some more news of the activity in North...
My own smugness toward radio would be taken down a peg or two soon enough. I hitchhiked a ride on the Texas, which I assume would be steaming from Port Leote down to Casablanca. I didn't know exactly how long it was before I began to notice the coast of Africa getting smaller and smaller. It seemed that Texas was disregarding my assumptions and going home. So as the invasion of North Africa headed inland, I headed toward Norfolk. When I returned to New York, my bosses demanded to know where I'd been for 6 weeks. That was when I learned that not a single one of the 13 stories I had filed from the radio bridge of the Texas had reached the United Press in London. They'd been sent via a British communication relay channel in Gibraltar, which was giving preference to their own reporters. It was enough to make a young wire service reporter think about turning in his typewriter and going into radio. For NPR News, this is Walter Cronkite. Thank you.